Support for WPR comes from the Madison Museum of Contemporary Art, an independent organization dedicated to creating experiences that educate, reflect, and inspire. More is at mmoca.org.
Support for WPR comes from 4imprint, providers of promotional products for businesses, including embroidered apparel, trade show items, and logoed business gifts. More is at 4imprint.com. 4imprint, for certain.
This is Central Time. I'm Judith Sears Poisson.
And I'm Rob Ferret. You may think of the Mexican presence in Wisconsin as a recent development, but people from Mexico and Mexican Americans from border states have been enriching our state's culture and history for over a century.
In a new book from the Wisconsin Historical Society, Sergio Gonzalez traces the stories of the individuals and groups that have been part of the Mexican experience in Wisconsin. He's a doctoral candidate in the University of Wisconsin-Madison's Department of History with research interests in American labor, immigration, and working class history, as well as the state's Latino community. Sergio, welcome to Central Time.
Hi, thank you for having me.
You talk about the first Mexican resident of the state, Rafael Baez, who was an accomplished musician who came in the late 19th century and had quite a career in Milwaukee. But the first significant group of Mexicans came in the early 20th century. What brought them here?
They came looking for work. They came looking for new employment opportunities. In the late 1910s and early 1920s, there weren't as many opportunities in Mexico. With changes in immigration policy, federal immigration policy here in the United States, industrialists and agriculturalists in Wisconsin looked south for new labor force to bring to Wisconsin. Unfortunately for this labor force, they didn't know when they were recruited to come to Wisconsin that many of them were coming as strikebreakers. Mm-hmm. They were brought up to basically help break some of the larger unions in Milwaukee. And so the very initial experience upon arrival here in Wisconsin in the city of Milwaukee was that of individuals who were coming to take jobs, individuals who were coming to take away opportunities from Milwaukeeans.
Were there other areas of the state where they settled maybe for agricultural opportunities?
Absolutely. So the first large groups that come to Milwaukee are actually following in line with other migrant laborers that had been coming to Wisconsin throughout the 1910s. And many of them had been recruited to work in the beet industry. In Spanish, they're called betabeleros, which is beet pickers. And they were following the paths of Eastern and Russian Europeans who had come before them. As those immigrant groups started to settle out of the migrant streams, Mexican descent individuals would replace them. And throughout the 1910s and 1920s, sometimes there were solteros, there were solos, but sometimes there were families as well, because usually migrant work was a family industry where everyone had to contribute to help provide for the family.
The agricultural season isn't through the winter here. So were they going back either to southern states or to Mexico itself?
Right. So in the 1910s and 1920s, they would absolutely follow the migrant stream. And so they would come up during the planting season. They would travel to a different farm for another planting season because, of course, agriculture moves in different steps throughout the year. And then they would travel back for the harvest season. But at the end of the harvest season in fall, most of them would go back either to the southern parts of the United States or to find other agricultural work where the weather was more temperate.
So what was the next wave after that initial wave in the 1910s and 1920s? When did we next see a large influx of Mexican workers and residents?
So the Great Depression decimates the state's Mexican descent community. In Milwaukee, by 1929, there were nearly 7,000 Mexican descent individuals, families living in Milwaukee, had settled themselves, had begun to incorporate themselves into the city in some way. But the Great Depression completely decimates that community. From 7,000, by 1935, it's closer to 1,500.
Wow.
Some of them leave voluntarily, repatriate themselves to go back to Mexico to look for opportunities. But others are forced to leave. They're deported by local institutions who are looking to relieve the welfare rolls throughout the 1930s. And Mexicans are seen as both surplus labor, but they're also portrayed by the local media and by institutions as being saps on those welfare institutions. And so the community is decimated. And again, it's not until World War II that we see a regrowth of the community. And the pull, again, is labor.
Often immigrants settle where their fellow countrymen and women are. Was that also the case for Mexicans?
It is. Their decision to settle was very much determined by where their employment was. And so the initial groups that came to Milwaukee settled on the near south side, around the tanneries, the foundries, the factories that they were working at. Their neighbors were often the European groups that they were replacing at times in the factories, or they were working side by side. To this day, the near south side of Milwaukee continues to be the predominant Latino part of town. And it's pretty impressive that over 100 years, the heart of that community continues to be in that initial place of settlement.
Sergio Gonzalez is a doctoral candidate in the University of Wisconsin-Madison's Department of History. He's the author of a new book titled Mexicans in Wisconsin. And as you just said, Sergio, the Mexican residents were living alongside the earlier waves of immigrants, often from Europe. Religion seems like it was a real bridge between those new Mexican residents and the communities that they were moving into. Can you give us some examples of that?
It's unfortunate that in many of the other social spaces, educational spaces, Mexicans found themselves discriminated against. But within the church, they found a sort of sense of shared fellowship. It was an understanding of a shared Catholicism, a shared religiosity that brought people together. So the most important story begins at the Holy Trinity Church, which is actually one of the oldest Catholic churches in Milwaukee. Mexican immigrants begin arriving at the church in the 1920s, and the white Catholics at the church look at them and say, these are individuals who can't understand our Mass, but they're Catholic like us, and they're here to praise the Lord. And so the decision was made within the white community to begin outreach efforts to the Mexican community. And working together, they developed their own independent Mexican mission chapel, which is now Our Lady of Guadalupe Holy Trinity Church. And throughout the 20th century, the church has continued to be a place where not all bridges have been built, but at a minimum, it's a space for imaginations to be kind of recreated, for different possibilities to be imagined.
You did say, and this has certainly been the case with other immigrants who are the latest arrivals, that there is friction often with the established communities that are from different ethnic backgrounds. And like other immigrant groups, Mexicans set up their own community centers and also mutual aid groups. What was the purpose, especially of those mutual aid groups?
It's interesting that you mentioned that, because the mutual aid societies in many ways mimic those that their predecessors had created. The two famous ones in Milwaukee in the late 1920s, La Sociedad Mutualista Hispano-Azteca and La Sociedad Emilio Carranza, organizations that celebrate ethnic pride. They celebrate a cultural heritage that is not represented in other spaces in Milwaukee. In other spaces in Milwaukee, Mexicans are told that they need to speak English to integrate into the community. They're told that they have to adopt American customs to be truly accepted. But even when they do those things, Mexicans find themselves still outside the boundaries of acceptance in Milwaukee. And so they make the decision to create these institutions as a way to celebrate their heritage, but also as a place to pull back and to build community within themselves. And so they do everything from celebrating fiestas to celebrating religious traditions to setting up banking institutions. Everything that you could think of, they try to do on their own because they can't find the ways to do it in other places.
One difference that stood out to me is that early arrivals were Mexican nationals, but later waves were actually made up by a lot of U.S. citizens of Mexican descent who had probably been living in some of the border states. Were those groups treated differently? Did the existing communities in Wisconsin think of Mexican nationals versus U.S. nationals who were Mexican differently?
In some ways, yes. So the shift really occurs in 1947 when the state's agricultural industry looks towards Texas as its base for recruiting labor. And beginning in 1947, for the next decade, more than 10,000 Tejanos, or Texas Mexicans, make their way to Wisconsin every single year to work in agricultural fields. But unfortunately, they find many of the same barriers that Mexican nationals had faced before them. They faced segregation and discrimination in places as far-fetched as Door County and Waupun, just as Mexican nationals had faced in Milwaukee in the 1920s. Their calls for a sense of citizenship, in other words, that their legitimacy was based on their American citizenship in the country, sometimes was not actually met with reality. And so they faced many of the same barriers. And by the 1960s and 70s, we really do see a cross-national, cross-documentation movement building in places like Milwaukee, where these communities say, regardless of our documentation status or our residency status, we're facing many of the same issues.
As we start to wrap up, I do want to move forward to the last few decades and touch on Chicano activism. First, Sergio, can you tell us what Chicano means?
It's a political identity. It's a cultural identity. In the 1960s and early 1970s, young Mexican-Americans or people of Mexican descent began to try to reclaim a sense of what their cultural heritage was. And it was often in defiance of a normative culture that meant to assimilate them into a larger society. And what they claimed is that their linguistic heritage, their cultural heritage, heritage, their historical background was important and needed to be not only preserved but celebrated. And so the identity of Chicano is a cultural and a national identity that grew in the 1960s.
You touched on some of the early topics that were of interest to Chicano activists. What are some of the issues now that have continued through over decades?
Fundamentally, the questions that confront people of Latin American descent and specifically Mexican descent in our state are the same ones that, people in the 1920s faced, which is, how do I create a sense of belonging in this space? How do I find a sense of community in a space that has often recruited me to come here for work, that needs my labor, that needs my population growth, and yet denies me the space in my communities? And so we see a series of anti-immigrant laws, both at the state house and at the federal level. And if we look back in history in the 1920s and the 1950s and the 1970s, people of Mexican descent faced similar issues. And their claims were the same. I have come here to build a life for myself. You have told me that I'm a part of your community, and I desire to be a full member of that.
Sergio, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
That was Sergio Gonzalez. He's a doctoral candidate in the University of Wisconsin-Madison's Department of History and is the author of a new book from the Wisconsin Historical Society Press titled Mexicans in Wisconsin.